Back together again, you and I, final day of November, Thursday, November 30th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. I open the show with comments on an op-ed piece written by a former Bridgeport state legislator. Only in Bridgeport, blogger Lenny Grimaldi returned with the latest on the ongoing Bridgeport mayoral election. And Quinnipiac University political science professor Dr. Wes Renfro commented on the passing and legacy of Connecticut resident Dr. Henry Kissinger. All right, we're at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I really like it when people go scorched earth. Now, you know what I mean by that. People going scorched earth. In other words, they don't hold back as to what they are saying, right? They want to say it. Partly because, or maybe in full, because of what they've experienced in the past and all that. So, you know, maybe it's a kind of thing where they saw stuff going on and figured and said, well, you know, guess what? I'm going to let people hear what they hear and hear me say what I say because I have to. What am I talking about? Well, the name John Hennessy or Jack Hennessy, very, very famous in Bridgeport politics, former Democratic state House member, state House rep Jack Hennessy from the 127th in Bridgeport, assumed office in 2005, left this past January after losing his bid for re-election. So if I do the math quick, that's 9 years. That's, let's say, 9 twos or 18. 18 and 5 is 2023. He has let loose with an op-ed today regarding the conduct of his party and the Democratic State Party, the State Central Committee, Governor Lamont, and what is going on in Bridgeport. I want to read most, if not all, of this to you because it's kind of like, wow, I read this. And then I said, geez, I know he's not serving anymore, but you read this, you say, okay, here's somebody who was on the inside and is not real happy. So if you'll, I think this is a great way to start the show because it's just, you talk about scorched earth. You talk about carpet bombing his party. This is in the Connecticut Mirror. Check it out online, ctmirror.org. Jack Hennessy writes, Connecticut state leaders complicit in Bridgeport absentee ballot scandal. Now, I'm reading this to you. This is not me saying this. This is Jack Hennessy. Governor Ned Lamont recently responded to questions regarding the ballot stuffing scandal in Bridgeport. He remarked, quote, I would like to see the wheels of justice speed up a little bit. Last time, 4 years ago, it took 3.5 years before we could hold somebody accountable. I think that was a problem. Jack Hennessy continues here. His words, not mine. It's been over 4 years since Governor Lamont appeared at the State Democratic Party annual Women's Leadership Award brunch, where Wanda Jeter Pataki, the Bridgeport Democratic Town Committee vice chair, a Joe Ganim campaign worker, and employed City Hall greeter, was honored for, quote, her work in the community. And today, Wanda is still out there working the community for votes. Jack Hennessy continues, the 2019 Connecticut Post article describes Jeter Pataki as, quote, well-known as an aggressive campaign worker who can help rake in the mail-in absentee ballots. Days later, after getting the honor, she was named as one of the Ganim supporters who, quote, schemed to illegally secure absentee ballot votes for the candidates endorsed by the Democratic Town Committee, unquote. My words, not my words, Jack Hennessy's words. In June of 2023, Jeter Pataki was recommended for possible criminal referral to the state's attorney for campaign activities related to the 2019 Democratic primary. On 19 September, Jeter Pataki was placed on paid administrative leave from the city of Bridgeport after surveillance video captured her stuffing ballots into an official drop box on multiple occasions. Jack Hennessy, again, former Bridgeport Democratic state rep, 9 terms or so, 2005 to 2023, continues in his Scorched Earth piece, quoting again, "It's now been more than 70 days of paid leave for Wanda. Mayor Gandom, the CEO of Bridgeport, claims he does not make personnel decisions when prompted by a reporter regarding Jeter Pataki's employment status. Wanda still collects city paychecks while she continues to collect absentee ballots throughout the city, courtesy of taxpayers, for the next primary. Wanda Jeter Pataki invoked her Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination 71 times when questioned regarding her actions stuffing ballots captured on surveillance video at the October 13 court hearing." He continues, again, Jack Hennessy's words, not mine. Quoting him again, "If the state Democratic Party were truly serious about election integrity in Bridgeport, they would have rescinded her award and publicly denounced her actions. To date, the state party chair has not commented on the actions of Wanda." He continues, quote, "If Mario Testa's Bridgeport Democratic Town Committee wanted to instill confidence in the elections process in Bridgeport, the membership would have taken action to remove Wanda as vice chairwoman and district leader. As of this date, the town committee has yet to act." Hennessy continuing again, quote, "If elected Democrats who were outspoken in their praise for Wanda in 2019 for her community efforts want to truly honor someone worthy, start with a person who does not engage in criminal activities that preys on the elderly community through the city renter rebate program to change the outcome of elections." Oh, Hennessy's not done. Quoting him again, this is not me saying this, this is him. "If Connecticut House Speaker Matt Ritter was sincere in his statements, quote, you cannot ignore what happened, unquote, and Democratic state reps and state Senate members want to fix the systemic election problems in Bridgeport, they would not have ignored other proposals and delayed action at the special session to install an election monitor in Bridgeport." He adds further, quote, "If Governor Lamont and other prominent elected officials want to turn the page and not have Bridgeport defining the state, quote unquote, they need to admit past mistakes in failing to act on election crimes in Bridgeport." Oh, he's not done. Quoting again, "When Nedford, Connecticut utilizes firms like Park City Consulting for get out the vote efforts in Bridgeport for his reelection campaign, he knows he's employing city workers who work to ensure favorable election results in Bridgeport. Honoring known ballot harvesters at an awards ceremony only enables and emboldens more illegal activities." He continues, quote, "4 years of no action and no accountability guarantees repeat behavior of the bad actors." Hennessy continues, quote, "Sadly, Judge William Clark's ruling did not set a precedent in Bridgeport. Two prior Connecticut judges have ordered new Democratic primaries in Bridgeport. In 2017, Judge Barbara Bellis ordered three new Democratic primaries. For the 133rd, Judge Barry Stevens ordered a new primary in my 2022 state rep primary due to absentee ballot irregularities." And finally, Jack Hennessy winds up with this. "There is no denying the people of Connecticut will continue to hear the sound of silence from Democrats who employ the Wandas of the world to run their absentee ballot campaigns." Finally, he says, "And the wheels of justice will never turn if our so-called leaders fail to act on decades of ballot harvesting in Bridgeport." Period. End of piece. Jack Hennessy is a former state rep, District 127 in Bridgeport. That, my friends, is a great example of going scorched earth here. And good for him. Good for him. Why has there been no resolution as to the 2019 complaints in this? And again, I'll say this over and over again, just so you know, I'm looking at this from afar. I don't live in Bridgeport. I'm looking at this from afar. I have no horses in these races. I don't. But you call me at this show every day at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And we talk about this, and we're waiting for things to be done. And all we hear is this constant drone of, well, the investigation is continuing, and, well, the judge said this and the judge said that. And I wanted to read this Jack Hennessy piece today to start this, because I read this morning and I said, amen. Is there really going to be, this is what I'm asking right now. Do you honestly think there's going to be a change here? When all you hear, from not all, but you hear it from enough of the powerful Democrats in Hartford, well, let's not overreact to this. I love that. Oh, let's, geez, you don't want to overreact to this now because it's just a problem in Bridgeport. Well, is that the way we define laws? Is that the way we're going to sit around and say, well, you know, there's only sleaze going, I'm sorry, alleged sleaze going on in two or three towns. So let's make laws based on town to town or city to city. So kudos to Jack Hennessy. I think I've had him on the show once or twice before. It's all a blur. But come on, he's right. The silence from Democratic leaders on this stuff, it is deafening. They know who the alleged culprit may be here, but everybody is afraid to do something. Why is this taking so long? I mean, yeah, we've got the second primary here and a probably a second general election here. That's a whole different thing. But good on Jack Hennessy for saying what needs to be said. Now, you know, he probably said it because he's not in the General Assembly anymore, and I get that, after getting defeated in a re-election effort in the 127th. But kudos for him saying it. Do you agree with the tone of his piece here that everybody can talk a real good game, but how are things actually going to change eventually? Maybe. All right, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. We'll get back to open phones for a chunk before we wrap things up today. It's a Thursday, though. We're back after the holidays. And, of course, Thursdays at right around 5, 10, or 12 means we check in with onlyinbridgeport.com's Lenny Grimaldi is here. Lenny, is there any stuffing left over? Any biscuits, any gravy, or is that all gone?
I am digesting still. I'm great. We've got breaking news, and I'm laughing and I'm crying at the same time because it's so funny. So, guess who's going to serve as the master of ceremonies for tomorrow's swearing-in ceremony of all elected officials in Bridgeport? Mayor Joe Gannon.
Okay, he is going to emcee the swearing-in tomorrow.
Yes, because he will not receive the oath of office himself.
But he's technically still mayor, obviously.
He's still mayor with all the powers of the chief executive because this election cycle, you know, of 2023 is going to bleed into 2024 for another couple of months. So because of that, he will not receive the oath of office, but he's decided to be the master of ceremonies for all the other elected officials tomorrow night, which in my lifetime, that's a first for a mayor to do it.
Okay.
So that's going to happen tomorrow. Yeah, a little strange twist, but yeah. It's this odyssey of this mayor election continues into it could be winter, spring, summer, and fall.
Yeah. Yes.
We may elect president next year before we have a mayor.
All right, so now let's. We haven't spoken in a couple of weeks, and people may have tuned out. So, what is happening now, Lenny? As we go to round three, which will be the second primary here, are both campaigns in absentee mode and money raising mode here? What's going on?
Yeah. Answer is yes and yes. First piece is money, and both campaigns are broke.
Wow.
I mean, so. Yeah, they're broke. They're chipping at stone right now, and they're going to raise some money.
Yeah,
It's not going to be. And two, you know, Joe Ganim raises money, right? He's raised over $600,000. He's spent it all. John Gomes has raised roughly $400,000. And with independent expenditures, you know, maybe another $75,000 to $100,000 more.
Wow.
So the Gomes campaign has done an outstanding job of raising money, and they've burned through it. So there's kind of a holding pattern with these campaigns because they don't have the money to keep the regular staff on board. They have to juice the coffers again. So that's part of the process. In fact, as we speak now, John Gomes has a fundraiser going on. The mayor has been raising money going back to this, what I call the serial donors. And some of the larger donors, you know, they have the bucks to reload. The bigger question is, like, you know, we're, whatever, you know, 4 weeks from Christmas or so, and we're in the throes of the Christmas holiday. You know, those $50, $100 donors, $150 donors, are they going to pony up? Because let's face it, I mean, they've got their spending priorities. So it's more like some of the lower donors, you know, probably aren't going to be there. So, you know, by the time we get to January 23rd, which will be the new primary, you know, I think both sides will probably get close to, if not to probably 100K, because they have some time. But it's not going to be unless one of the candidates ponies up their own money. You know, they're going to go the traditional route. Now, it could be very well. I've speculated. Well, one of the candidates say, "Hey, listen, I'm gonna put up my own money."
Yeah,
because we're hitting a wall fundraising wise, and this is a whole new deal because we're dealing with so many, you know, potential variables, including the weather.
And you would mention, Lenny, last time we did talk that not this is going to go up even another notch with Bridgeport absentees here. You're right. I mean, they're paranoid, right? And you said, you know, the primary in January, maybe another general in February. What if it's snowing sideways on both of those days? So they're going to slam the absentees again this time, right?
Yeah, they're both going to work it, but here's the wrinkle. The way the judge has scheduled this new primary, he's not allowing anyone to take out absentee ballots until it's going to be only, like, going to be around December 28th or 29th.
Wow.
Right? So it's not going to be like traditionally with elections, you have months in advance. To be able to take out absentee ballot applications. So the way state statute works for a primary, absentee ballots must be available 3 weeks out from the actual primary.
Yeah.
4 weeks for a general election, for a primary, 3 weeks. But the judge has ruled that so political operatives cannot walk into the town clerk's office to take out absentee ballot applications until 3 days before absentee ballots can become available. So that means here's what's going to happen. And I guarantee you we're going to have a huge discussion on this. What you're going to see is a whole bunch of political operatives lined out the door of the town clerk's office for the first day they can get applications. So the way that works is everybody's going to have to – anyone who wants five or more – absentee ballot applications has to sign out for them. They have to sign out so they can keep track of who's actually in possession of those absentee ballot applications that are going to be disseminated pretty quickly to the usual serial absentee ballot voters.
Interesting. So it's going to be like the start of a Grand Prix race. You know, those races where the drivers are not in the cars and then everybody has to sprint across to the car.
Absolutely. It's going to be a rat race to town clerk's office, sign out the ballots and just drop off, not the ballots, the applications, just get the applications and then start disseminating them to their usual serial absentee ballot voters. And that's what's going to happen. Now, a regular voter can call the town clerk's office and say, listen, I would like you to mail me an absentee ballot application. And you can do that. But, you know, the vast majority of the absentee ballot applications disseminated are by political operatives on both sides.
Wow. Before we talk about your old boss, who is doing remarkably well in the polls, I started the show reading a rather caustic op-ed from former state rep Jack Hennessy. He just laid everybody low in this. I mean, he just went after everybody in this whole thing about the process, about state Democrats, about the silence of Nancy DiNardo. He apparently, in this op-ed, was like in I don't care mode. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like fire up the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because you need a chainsaw to cut through the hypocrisy here. So understand Jack Hennessy, and God bless him, I know Jack a long time, he's a John Gomes supporter, right, against Joe Gamble. In fact, you know, all the very people that Jack Hennessy is accusing of this, that, and the other thing, they've done absentee ballots for him, too, right?
All right.
And so Jack Hennessy, when he lost his election last year in the primary, you know, he lost on the machines handily, and the only thing that kept Jack close were absentee ballots and an operation ran by his campaign manager, Maria Pereira, who's also under investigation for absentee ballot abuse. So, and she's also been arrested for allegedly assaulting a senior citizen on election day. So I think the other side has to be told. And that's why, yes, I heard you and I get it. I read his op-ed. And I was cracking up reading the whole way through it.
All right. Now, from that, cracking up on that, to your old boss, Lenny, there's a lot of people starting to say, hey, now I know we're a year out, but they're saying, hey, not only are these polls in like five of the six swing states holding for Mr. Trump, they're actually increasing. I know a year is forever, but there have to be people, Lenny, on the Democratic side saying, what is going on here? And Mr. Trump must be basking in this whole thing. What are your thoughts on that?
I still think they'd rather the Democratic establishment still rather face Trump than Haley, because that's dangerous, right? But, you know, leave it to just regular people to ask the most basic question. And people do ask me, because I worked for him for a number of years.
Yeah.
Like, why is he popular with a certain audience? And I think I really do, and part of it's tongue-in-cheek, but part of it's reality. He's kind of the new John Gotti. No, think about it. He's the Teflon Don in more ways than one. His name is Don. Now, let's go back, you know, a couple of decades. John Gotti defeated the government three straight times.
Mm.
And they got him on the fourth time, right? Now, Donald Trump has been charged four times. But if you recall, there was a certain element that liked Gotti because he did this and that and the other thing for the old
people. The neighborhood was safe, the fireworks displays.
Yes,
oh, yeah,
correct.
They loved him, yeah.
Right. And when he was convicted, there was rioting in the streets of New York, nationally.
I remember.
There was rioting in the streets. They were flipping cars over, and it was insane. So it's like it kind of reminds me of that. On a political level, where you have somebody, and I've said it many, many times, you know, what is this guy's popularity with certain people? Mm-hmm. It's that, you know, my former boss, what you see is what you get. He tends to puke up what's in his head that other people want to express but don't do it, right? And that's what he does, where typical politicians just don't do it.
Oh, right? I can't say that. And he's probably thinking, why not? Right? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Right. Of course. And that's what he does. He says, you know, my time with him was never like, you know, we had an issue. And he goes, well, was I not helpful? I go, well, it wasn't helpful, but maybe we can do this, right? It was like, you know, remember all the first couple of years people thought they could take his Twitter account away, his phone? No, you're not going to take that away.
No.
It's not who I used to laugh at that. But yeah, on a certain level, he's loving these poll numbers. But also, as you point, it's a long way to Tipperary. It's going to take some time to sort this thing out, and nobody really knows. But yeah, I think it's in larger picture. If I am representing, you know, Joe Biden, I'd rather be facing Trump in the general than at Nikki Haley, you know, or Governor DeSantis from Florida. And that's going to be a fascinating debate tonight, as you pointed out.
Yeah, you got your wine and your pork rinds all ready for this one? You got the big snack tray already?
I got my G&T lined up. I don't do my G&T on Thursday until I'm off the air with you.
Okay. All right, go pour it. Lenny, thanks. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right, thank you.
All right, Lenny's cranking the G&T. Is it Tanqueray and tonic? That's the good stuff there, yeah. Yeah, what'll be your I can't wait to see this now. I'm going to be flipping back and forth between that and football. I know, but, you know, it's a good game tonight, so I guess I got to. All right, open phones if you want to jump in here before our next guest, 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. By the way, coming up about an hour from now, our buddy, our pal, we do our Thursday afternoon 5:15 check-in with Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. Yes, yes, yes. I guess the Gomes camp and the Ganim camp are busy fundraising as they go get ready for round three. Like I told you, Ali Frazier, 1, 2, and 3. We're going to have at least Gomes Ganim, 1, 2, and 3, and then maybe round four. Has this ever happened in the realm of U.S. politics? I mean, who knows? Who knows? I'd love to find out. I mean, like I said, it probably happened in some little podunk town who knows, the 1860s, the 1880s. But, man, if we go four rounds in this, how about that? All right, we'll get back to open phones in just a bit. Dr. Henry Kissinger has passed away. He was 100 years old. If you're about my age, maybe a little younger, but certainly older, you know, Henry Kissinger's influence on the U.S. was as great, if not maybe greater, than many U.S. presidents. And to talk about this, we welcome a guest we've had on a few times before, Senior Associate Dean, Professor of Political Science at Quinnipiac University, Dr. Wes Renfro, to talk about the legacy and the attitudes around Connecticut resident, we should say, Dr. Henry Kissinger. Hey, Wes, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you? Good to have you back.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
You know, and you've probably seen this, Wes, you go to a certain type of website and you see Henry Kissinger lauded as this incredible thinker on foreign policy, a guy that even probably up until his death, he was sought out for his opinion on stuff. And then, Wes, you go a few clicks away, and the guy was a war criminal. You see that a lot of people thought his actions during and around Vietnam were abhorrent, and he should have had a Nuremberg-like trial. What are your thoughts? Let's start with this. Where does he lie on the spectrum of U.S. personalities, foreign policy people, or does it really just depend on your opinion?
I mean, I think that even Henry Kissinger's many detractors would acknowledge that he's consequential. He certainly was the most powerful Secretary of State in the modern era. And in the 20th century, he's probably the second most consequential behind Dean Acheson, although mm-hmm. that's a debatable point. You know, this is a guy who served in some of the most crucial decisions in the 20th century. It's a long record. There's, you know, undeniably some very crowning positive achievements and some real bad stuff mixed in there as well. There is kind of a cottage industry of folks who, you know, are critical, I think rightfully so, of Henry Kissinger. He's a very divisive figure, and it's kind of hard to find people who take a step back and do a comprehensive and fair analysis. A lot of it is what your personal politics are, influences how you view the guy.
What did he do well, Wes? What separated Henry Kissinger, at least in your mind, from the numerous other secretaries of state that we've had, some of whom on their own right have been very consequential? But what did Kissinger get that maybe the others didn't?
So, you know, in the realm of policy, the shift to opening the United States to warmer relations with China is enormously consequential. Henry Kissinger also played a significant role in the 1973 war in the Middle East. And although this is much more complicated, Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon did bring an end to the war in Vietnam, although mm-hmm. many people would assert, rightfully so, that they probably dragged out the war unnecessarily long, and that the carpet bombing of Cambodia killed, you know, 50,000 or so innocent folks because it was indiscriminate. In terms of personality and influence, you know, this is a guy who was simultaneously for a period both the National Security Advisor and the Secretary of State. And it's important to remember that by 1973, when Nixon is really caught up in Watergate and Kissinger was never implicated in any way, that Richard Nixon started to, frankly, lose it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And Henry Kissinger was a stabilizing force, not only for Richard Nixon, but for other world leaders. And he managed that sort of dangerous time when there was a sanity vacuum, frankly, in the White House. And so there's a lot of other things about Henry Kissinger, but those are some of the high points.
And I don't know whether you saw this, Wes, Ted Koppel interviewed him, I think in May or June, it was for CBS. And even in one of his final interviews where Koppel mentioned he was blind in one eye, Kissinger was, and almost practically deaf. But the questioning was still tough from Ted Koppel. And Kissinger just seemed to have, and I don't know how to quantify this, Wes, but to me, you've got that intellect that just gets it. I mean, you know how they say some quarterbacks can read defenses and some can't. Did Kissinger just have a way of seeing things maybe that others didn't or not?
You know, it is, I think, factually true that Henry Kissinger was a brilliant man. He was an acclaimed academic. He translated some dense academic stuff into some best-selling books. He certainly understood great power politics. There's no doubt that his brain was big as all get out. I think the rightful criticisms of Henry Kissinger are about his morality.
So, okay, I'm glad you said that. So let's take this part of it now. What was wrong with Henry Kissinger in executing what he did for various presidents and then probably had his brain picked in years after that? What do you think he could have done better? What were his faults?
So Henry Kissinger was intellectually and morally and in policy ways oftentimes a man who believed that the ends justified the means. And you know, he tried to advance the United States foreign policy and position in the world in a way that he and many others, frankly, thought were appropriate. But that often came at great cost. Certainly the carpet bombing of Cambodia, the intercession which overturned the democratically elected president in Chile, certainly the involvement in East Timor. You know, there are a lot of human casualties. Now, I will say that I think that a lot of the people who are, you know, the most vocal about Henry Kissinger being a war criminal, you know, they make some very persuasive arguments. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think there is a little bit of a fixation on Henry Kissinger because, you know, war crime, war criminal is a somewhat elastic concept. And I think there is somewhat of a consistency problem because, frankly, there's a great number of other folks who have been in positions of power who have perpetrated similar policies at great human cost, and they're not as often called out as Henry Kissinger. So I do think there is this myth and fixation of Henry Kissinger, and that's not to say that there's a lot of stuff that wasn't objectionable, because there certainly was, but sort of the star of Henry Kissinger is the international bad guy took on a life of its own.
Dr. Wes Renfro is the guest talking about the life and times of Dr. Henry Kissinger, who for years lived in Kent, Connecticut, by the way, a longtime Connecticut resident. Wes, was Henry Kissinger in just his breadth of influence and his larger-than-life presence, was he, quote-unquote, kind of an aberration? And you mentioned him and one other man, but was he the exception and not the rule of secretaries of state, or not?
He was definitely the exception. And certainly the reliance and the faith and the trust that Richard Nixon put into him is unique. Most presidents are not willing to, frankly, surrender that much of their agency and autonomy to the Secretary of State. And when you go back and look at the archival record, you know, Nixon is talking to him 8 times a day, 10 times a day. Nobody else had as much access. And that's true across administrations. You know, I think this is a well-known anecdote, but one that illustrates his access and relationship with Nixon and speaks to his power during that time. When the end sort of comes and Richard Nixon knows that he's going to resign lest he be impeached and convicted, Henry Kissinger comes to the White House in sort of an advisory friend capacity. And, you know, Nixon's not a people person for sure, but he tells Henry Kissinger and he invites Henry Kissinger in the White House to get on his knees and pray with him. And that, I think, is really symbolic of the faith that Nixon invested in Kissinger, for good or for bad.
You know, finally, Wes, what was Kissinger's legacy as to maybe redefining or resetting the position of Secretary of State? In other words, I'm thinking, what was a post-Kissinger like for following Secretaries of State versus some of the people that served before him? What was his legacy?
So I'm not sure that there was anybody quite like him before or after. I think that after, a number of presidents have been very conscious of the amount of power that Henry Kissinger held, frankly, at the expense of the president. And I think that many subsequent presidents in the back of their mind have probably thought, I don't care how smart the Secretary of State is. I don't want a Secretary of State like Henry Kissinger, because while the Secretary of State is an important figure in his or her own right, the president should be the chief architect of American foreign policy. And so I think presidents are actually quite conscious and don't want a repeat of Henry Kissinger.
Interesting, because finally, Wes, if you look back, I mean, Nixon knew foreign policy, even outside of Kissinger. I mean, I watch interviews today, and the guy was fascinating when you asked him about China and Russia. You think maybe he was so open to giving Kissinger power because, hey, this guy's in my wheelhouse. We get it. He's a comrade here, because it's not like Nixon was a foreign policy dummy.
No, and Richard Nixon himself had a great big brain. Historian Robert Dalek wrote a book and basically described parts of the Nixon-Kissinger relationship as a co-presidency. And I think part of it is exactly what you've described, a recognition that we view things similarly, that we understand the strategic implications of policy X and policy Y. I do also think, and this is true for Henry Kissinger's relationship throughout his life, that he, by design, had a particular way of working with the people whom he supported and was very good at ingratiating himself. And so toady is probably not the correct way to describe it, but something along those lines. And Richard Nixon liked to have his ego stroked. And Henry Kissinger, despite having a huge ego in his own right, was sort of willing to play that role. And Richard Nixon ate it up, frankly.
Great stuff. Dr. Wes Renfro, Senior Associate Dean and Professor of Political Science at Quinnipiac University. Wes, good to have you back, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There you go. All right. The Henry Kissinger, 100 years old. If you get a chance, folks, find that. It's very easy to find. It's on YouTube. I watched it earlier today. Ted Koppel is still out there. I think Ted is pushing 80 right now or whatever, but he and Kissinger had this, you know, not adversarial, but Ted Koppel covered Kissinger way, way back in the Nixon days. So he's known him for, you know, 30, 40 years or whatever. He did another kind of a final reflective interview with Henry Kissinger for CBS Sunday mornings. So it's out there. It's about 10 minutes long. It's interesting. It was a Kissinger's home, which I guess is the one in Kent he had. This was posted, I think, in May. I think it's time-stamped or date-stamped, like late May or so. And there was some pretty heady talk about foreign policy there. And apparently the guy, even up until the end, people loved him or hated him, war criminal or incredible mind, they were still seeking out his counsel, his thoughts on things, as people were with Richard Nixon. You read books about Nixon, particularly the book that Monica Crowley wrote, And, yeah, I mean, Nixon may have been this pariah, much the way that, you know, people considered that of Henry Kissinger. But still, you know, some people say, well, you know, I don't love the guy, but let me see what he thinks about this.